they're not listed as having.
But we have to. Yeah. We've gotten permission.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Healthcare. It is Thursday, April 13th, and we will only be able to pass out two bills today because we do not have paperwork. But if there are amendments, et cetera, we will be discussing the amendments on each one. So I will like to open a work session on Senate Bill 856. Bring us up to date, Oliver.
Great. Are we rescinding the subsequent referral? 856. That's got a subsequent referral.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 856 was before the committee on March 14th. It allows naturopathic physicians to perform a number of activities medical doctors and other licensed healthcare professionals are currently authorized to perform in Oregon. There is a dash 2 amendment which removes reference to medical professional liability insurance, removes reference to complementary health care services, and adds naturopathic physicians, a healthcare provider is able to determine need for hospice care for terminally ill patients. And there's a dash 3 which removes reference to naturopathic physicians as qualified healthcare professionals able to clear a student to return to play after experiencing a concussion from participating in school sports. We do not have the paperwork for either of the amendments.
Okay, so Phil, we do not have the paperwork, but would you come up here in case we have any questions? And
I was closing the door. It removed
that piece. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
So from your standpoint, I know that is OMA here. Okay. So please explain why the dash 2 and 3s came to us.
You bet. Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Phil Donovan here on behalf of the Oregon Association of Naturopathic Physicians. So I would start off by saying that there was, when we first came in for this hearing, there was a dash 1 amendment which replaced large sections of the bill. And that's what the testimony that you heard reference to. Following that public hearing, you, Madam Chair, took the time to review all 124 sections of that legislation, posed several questions to us. Through that conversation and discussion, we identified a section that needed to be removed. That was the complementary care section that Oliver referred to. And at the hearing itself, the Oregon Medical Association said, hey, medical malpractice subsidy, could you find it in your heart to move that, remove that from the legislation? And we did. And obviously, at the testimony, Laura Farr, who sat before you, said that the hospice section had been inadvertently removed in the dash 1 amendment. So that is the genesis of the dash 2 amendment that's before you. Then in subsequent conversations with the Oregon Medical Association, we mutually agreed to remove the two sections that are related to concussions and return to play, and that's going to be an ongoing discussion, and we're comfortable with that. But because the dash 2 had already been drafted, we went into LC. We were like, what's the easiest way to, because it's a 124-page bill, what's the easiest way to fix this bill or specifically remove those two sections? Legislative Council recommended the dash 3, which is before you. And I think with that, we have a consensus product to develop for the committee's consideration.
Okay. And so, Courtney, just wanted to confirm regarding the dash 2s and 3s that addressed your concern.
For the record, Courtney Dresser for the Oregon Medical Association, and we want to thank everyone for working with us a little bit on this. And the OMA is neither opposed or for this.
You're neutral.
There, that's a nice word for it right now. We're neutral, and we appreciate the amendments.
All right. Thank you very much.
Do you want to adopt the amendments? Or?
Yes.
Okay. And then we can
so,
wait.
And I, so the, is there any questions? No. And is this one, thank you. We're rescinding that, right? Yes.
That's for 45.
No, that's for 45, so we don't, yeah, but we are rescinding that. Okay, so we are in work session.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash 1 amendment into Senate Bill 856.
2 and 3.
Dash 2.
House 2 and dash 3.
Oh, the 2 and 3, not the 1. Okay.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt. Screw what I just said.
Senator Cruz.
That's an actual thing we use to put stuff together on the farm.
Yeah, I know that part. I know that part. I do use those myself. Okay.
Disregard.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -2 amendment dated 4/7/17 into Senate Bill 856.
Senator Cruz moves to adopt the -2 amendments dated 4/7/17 into Senate Bill 856. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered, and please mark Senator Canope as excused.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -3 amendment dated 4/12/17 into Senate Bill 856.
Senator Cruz moves to adopt the -3 amendments into Senate Bill 856. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered, and we will carry Senate Bill 856 over till Tuesday the 18th. So we're done, right? We close the work session on 856. We will open a work session on Senate Bill 485.
Madam Chair, as members of the committee, Senate Bill 485 was before the committee on February 23rd and then on April the 6th. Senate Bill 485 exempts for-profit and non-profit businesses that provide palliative care and majority medical services through a rural health clinic from Oregon law that requires physician ownership among entities created for the purpose of practicing medicine. There is a -1 amendment. It is on OLIS. The -1 amendment exempts nonprofit corporations from Oregon's Corporate Practice of Medicine Act if specific federal certification requirements are met and the entity provides services to migrant, rural, homeless, or other medically underserved populations from Oregon's Corporate Practice of Medicine Act. Exempts for-profit, nonprofit business entities from, again, Oregon's Corporate Practice of Medicine Act if entity operates solely as a rural health clinic. There is a no revenue impact and there is a minimal physical impact. Paperwork is ready if the committee so moves the bill.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -1 amendment dated 4/11/17 into Senate Bill 485.
Senator Cruz moves the -1 amendments into dated 4/11/17 into Senate Bill 485. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? They are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 485 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and request that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Business and Transportation be rescinded.
Never mind.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves 485 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Business and Transportation be rescinded. Is there any discussion?
I was worried about that referral, and I'm glad it's gone.
Clerk will
no offense meant. Chair of that committee. I just wonder if that was going to get in the way of it moving.
We've checked committee with solid land support.
Great. We're all good.
Senator Byer.
Yes.
Senator Pell.
Excuse.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Yes.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Yes.
Chair Monsanto.
Aye. Motion carries. Senate Bill 485 will be carried by Senator Prozansky.
Yep.
Close the work session on Senate 485 and open. Colleagues, we are not going to do Senate Bill 861. I have talked with Kaiser. Are they here? They have indicated that they are going to be working very closely with OHA. If not, this bill will be coming back, but that they will be working to meet the reporting requirements to the best of their ability. Is there any discussion on this? All right, so 861 is going away. I didn't open a work session, did I?
No.
On 861. Okay, I will open a work session on Senate Bill 808.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 808 was before the committee on April the 6th. The measure requires Oregon Health Authority to adopt rules specifying health screening testing for newborns based on national guidelines. It would establish a review committee on health screen testing for newborns, task the committee to study and propose recommendations for health screen testing for newborns in Oregon. There is a dash one amendment. It is on OLIS. The dash one requires OHA to adopt rules specifying a newborn screening test when the Federal Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, approves of a new methodology after a health condition is added to the national guidelines. Requires screening laboratories that provide testing of newborns to implement FDA-approved tests no later than 3 years after a condition is added to national guidelines. There is a no revenue impact, and we're waiting for the fiscal.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, okay, Madam Chair. Excuse me. I move the dash one amendment into Senate Bill 808.
Senator Cruz moves the dash one amendments into Senate Bill 808. And the reason that we are moving the dash one amendments, we know that from the proponents that they didn't like the permissive language. They wanted may to be changed to shall. But we, as a committee, we could get the votes with the permissive language. We couldn't with the other. So is there any further discussion with the dash ones?
Wait, I'm sorry. I don't understand something you just said, Madam Chair.
Yes.
You said we have the votes with the required language, but not with the permissive language?
With the permissive language. Way. That's in the dash ones.
It says shall, but shall to the, page 2, line 4 says, shall to the extent practicable implement a net laboratory developed test no later than 3 years. So that's a restrictive, not a permissive.
And I do believe that is OHA here that this is acceptable. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is after it's been certified at the national level. So it's once all of the testing and all that has been done. And
when there is a
it is the standard.
Okay.
When there is a standard.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes. Okay.
Well, I'm fine with it.
So is there any discussion, any more discussion on the amendment? Is there any opposition to the amendment? Please, there is none. Please mark Senator Canope as excused. And we do not have the paperwork, so we will carry this over till next Tuesday, the 18th, April 18th, waiting for the paperwork. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 808, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 233.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 233 was heard on April the 4th. The bill codifies definitions of community benefit, eligibility categories, flexible services, related party, and social determinants of health, requires Oregon Health Authority to publicly release financial and health care utilization data used to collect global budgets for coordinated care organizations. There is a dash two amendment that it's on the OLIS. The dash two defines terms actuarial soundness, prohibits the Oregon Health Authority from claiming financial and utilization data among other data sources used by the agency to calculate global budgets as a trade secret, allows Department of Consumer Business Services to charge a fee to the non-prevailing party involved in the independent rate appeal process. There is no revenue impact, and we're waiting for the fiscal.
Okay, so we have the dash two amendment.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendment dated 4/3/17 into Senate Bill 233.
Senator Cruz moves the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 233. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? They are adopted. Please mark Senator Canopus excused. And colleagues, we don't have the paperwork on this yet, so we'll have to carry it over till Tuesday, April 18th. And is there anyone that wants to discuss the dash two amendments? Okay, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 233 and open a work session on Senate Bill 234.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 324 was before the committee. Thank you, Senator Hayward. Senate Bill 234 was before the committee on April 4th. It requires the Oregon Health Authority to renew its contracts with coordinated care organizations if certain conditions are met. There are no amendments, and any testimony is available on OLIS.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 234 with a due pass recommendation and request that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 234 with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
The chair of the subcommittee is going to see this bill. Thanks you very much.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Beyer?
Yes.
Senator Cannell?
Excuse.
Aye.
Vice
Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Montesano?
Aye. Motion carries, and this bill is on its way to Ways and Means, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 234 and open a work session on Senate Bill 793.
Members of the committee, before you is Senate Bill 793. It was before the committee on March. Requires drug manufacturers to report to the Department of Consumer and Business Services the prices of prescription drugs sold in Oregon. There is a dash one on OLIS as well as a dash two. We do not have the paperwork.
Okay, so will you please describe what the dash ones are? And we won't adopt the dash ones or the dash twos until Monday, so that Tuesday, to allow people to give us input if they have any on either the dash ones or the dash twos.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The dash ones and the dash twos are identical with one exception. Both bills would establish a price list on that DCBS would set up, and the dash twos requires manufacturers to include, it was supposed to be just a reference to the DCBS website in advertisements in this state so that people could get it, and that was a suggestion that came up in a work group that Senator Cruz and I held, that we just have a centralized website because there are so many different prices, and that was suggested, so that's what we've used. Unfortunately, there was a miscommunication with the drafter, so at the moment, the dash twos include a requirement that the advertisements include the wholesale acquisition cost. That was not the intent of the dash twos. So other than that, the two amendments are identical, so I'm just going to describe the dash ones. Basically, we tried to narrow this down. First of all, I want to thank Senator Cruz for working closely with me on this and all the people who participated in the work group on this. We tried to narrow it down a lot, so it wasn't that every drug price would be evaluated, but simply that manufacturers would have to submit wholesale acquisition costs of all drugs to the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and those would be maintained on a publicly available website. It would establish a drug pricing unit in DCBS, and then drug manufacturers would have to report price increases if they were in excess of certain percentages based on various characteristics of the drugs. So we decided to split drugs into various categories. Generics that cost, where the wholesale acquisition cost is less than $30 a month, don't even need to justify price increases because they're inexpensive and they're going to stay inexpensive. If the price is going to go above $30 a month, then that would need to be reported. There would be a 10% allowable increase on generic or brand name drugs that have been FDA approved for more than 5 years and cost $30 to $100 a month, a 5% increase on generic or brand name drugs that have been FDA approved for more than 5 years and cost $100 to $5,000 a year, a 3.4% increase for brand name drugs costing over $5,000 a year, and a 15% increase for brand name drugs on the market for less than 5 years. The reporting and justification process will happen once a year in correlation with the insurance division's rate setting process to make it so that insurance companies can use the prices as part of their rate setting process. And the reporting would be proactive for the subsequent calendar year. The overall principle, Madam Chair, the amounts and the percentages in here are not, to my mind, fixed in stone. But the idea was to get a structure in place before this moves to Ways and Means, which it would, and to divide drugs into different categories and to make it clear that we're really only looking at excessive price increases. I think people could make legitimate arguments that the dollar amounts may need to be tweaked, the percentages may need to be tweaked, but the idea is that different drugs fall into different categories. The one other provision that's important of these amendments is that it would be from when the active ingredient is first FDA approved. One of the distressing things that's happened in, and one of the reasons we've seen these substantial increases in prices in some drugs that have been on the market for decades, is because previously FDA approval had less rigorous requirements than it now does. And so there's an exception under federal law that says that people can take drugs that have been FDA-approved but under the old process and get them reapproved under the more stringent process and re-patent them and get new exclusive rights. And that means that drugs that have been around for a very long time that are being used for exactly the same purpose that they were being used for before can have their prices jacked up dramatically. So we're trying to prevent that by the provision that the prices can't go up if the active ingredient has been FDA approved for more than 5 years, and to address those kinds of issues. Again, I would not want to say that all of these specifics of the exact amounts or things like that have been completely agreed upon, but I would say the overall structure has been pared down substantially, and DCBS does think they can manage it. Thank you, Senator Beyer. DCBS is actually, they're not, DCBS isn't here, are they? No.
Yeah,
they are. DCBS has told me that they think they're more than capable of pulling this together. It will, of course, have a fiscal, but that would be paid for by a fee ultimately, but that's why it has to go to Ways and Means, even if we move it out of this committee, which I hope it will. There may be other characteristics that you'd like me to talk about, but I think better for me to wait for questions.
Okay. And it looks like we'll be focusing on the dash ones and not the dash twos, and it's extremely important for me and the members of the committee that after the stakeholders that this may affect, it's very important for you to contact all of the members of the committee to let us know how you feel about the dash one amendments. I'd really appreciate that.
Yeah, just a comment, because I did not actually see the amendments until yesterday.
Which is when we got them back, so just to
know,
be clear.
I know. I'm just saying I
wasn't
didn't see
them. Wasn't hiding them from my colleagues.
No, I know that.
Okay.
But I didn't see them until yesterday.
Right. No, I didn't either.
And the first thing I noticed was that the way it is written, your Tier 1 is completely included in Tier 2.
I'll go back and relook at that, Senator. Thank you.
Well, the Tier 1 is $30 to $100 a month, and Tier 2 is $100 to $5,000 a year. If you're paying $30 a month, that is more than $100
a year.
No,
it's $100 per month to $5,000 per year.
I'm just saying, I think there's some...
We can adjust it if need be. That's easy to fix.
All right. Message has been sent out. Please give us input. I'd really appreciate it. Did I open a work session? Yes. Okay. So.
So it's the dash ones.
Dash ones is really the only.
Going to focus on the dash ones.
Yeah. That's okay. All right. With that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 793, and we are going to. Carry over Senate Bill 235 just in case we're going to be making an error some way. So we're going to just carry over Senate Bill 235 and... All right, so we're now ready for this. Okay, all right, so now we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 998. Oliver.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 998 requires on or after January 1st, 2018, persons selling tobacco products or inhalant delivery systems in Oregon to be licensed by the Department of Revenue. Requires the Department of Revenue to adopt through rulemaking the dollar amount of the registration, which is not to exceed $25, allows the Department of Revenue to share registration information with the Oregon Health Authority and the Department of Justice. Preempts local governments from regulating tobacco products or inhalant delivery systems, grandfathers in existing local ordinances and rules, abolishes the state tobacco policy law enforcement fund. There may be a revenue and fiscal impact. We do not have statements on this. There is a dash two on OLIS.
And have the dash ones been?
There is a dash one. It did not get posted until 5 minutes after.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I want to apologize. That was my fault. This was originally Senator Boquist's bill, and he had drafted the dash ones. I did not know until just a little while ago that he had not released them. And so we got permission from him to release them. That's why they're late in coming.
But are they on OLIS now? But
yeah.
Okay, but can we talk about them as an informational?
Yeah, we just can't move them, right?
I think that's correct. If you want, we can stand at ease, and I can
with
Legislative Council.
Could you just check? And then we can start talking about the dash twos, because that has been posted. Okay. So we also have the dash twos. Do you want to just explain the dash twos? That's the...
The dash two... sorry, I've not read carefully through the dash two.
It will establish the right for
smoking porches.
And will affect the Indoor Clean Air Act.
Or maybe more like patios would be a better word.
Or patios.
Amendment for 235.
No, we're now on 998.
Oh, 998, I'm sorry. I apologize, my bad.
Okay, so who is here to, you can go ahead, is here to talk about the dash twos? Bill Perry, where are you? Okay, we will not talk about the dash twos yet, and hopefully someone will try to find him. All right, so to talk about the original bill, I have here Richard Kosasan, Justin Rainey, and Matt Minahan. Is this on the base bill?
The dash one amendments.
The dash one? Okay.
Base.
The dash ones. Oh, but we can't really talk about them until we... we'll stand at ease.
What are we doing?
We're using the amendment to show up here.
And Matt Minahan.
Madam Chair, thank you. Richard Kosasan with the Oregon Neighborhood Store Association, primarily representing small convenience stores throughout the state. Here today in support of Senate Bill 998 and the Dash 1 amendments. Proponents, and I think everyone here is vividly aware of the fact that proponents over the years have made the argument very clearly that we need to know who is selling tobacco-related products throughout the state. That, to me, has been one of the number one objectives, number one arguments put forth by the advocates. I believe Senate Bill 998, and specifically with the Dash 1 amendments, accomplishes that goal. Individual retail establishments would be required to register through the Department of Revenue. I think it's interesting to note that the Department of Revenue, it is my understanding, already it currently maintains a list of approximately 4,200 retail establishments in the state of Oregon. So that should be fairly easily accomplished, and it should be an appropriate goal. The Dash 1 amendments go on to set out some modifications in terms of the penalty matrix. Specifically, if you have the amendments, the Dash 1 amendments, line 10, 11, 12, 13 suggests that indeed the registration of a retail establishment would be revoked, and it would be revoked with five or more violations during a 12-month period. So I think we're focusing on the bad actors, which I think is very appropriate, and I think everybody in the retail community would make the argument and hold the premise that the focus should be on a bad actor as opposed to a normal retail establishment. To bolster that, the 2016 SINAR amendment and the report associated with the SINAR amendment requiring inspections of retail establishments in the state of Oregon. The 2016 report showed a compliance rate in Oregon of just about 94%. So rather than focus on the 94%, I think it would be prudent to focus on the 6% through education one, registration, and appropriate penalties if they so apply. I think the five or more violations, too, comports with some of the provisions under the 2009 Federal Tobacco Control Act. And at the bottom of the page on lines 18, 19, 20, 21, top of page 2, I think is representative of a political reality, and that would address Multnomah County's ongoing tobacco enforcement program. With that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions. Would encourage a serious consideration of Senate Bill 998 with the Dash 1 amendments. Thank you.
I don't know when to raise the question. I'm reading the underlying bill, and it refers to 18 years of age throughout. If we pass this bill, it will likely pass after Senate Bill 754, and historically speaking, the way the law works, the thing that gets adopted is the thing that's the bill that's passed later. So if we pass 754 out of the House before this one gets to the House and it passes afterwards, how does that affect the date, the age of sale in this bill if we pass it? I'm concerned about making the legal age of sale 21, but then changing it in this bill back to 18.
Are we changing the law?
That's the effect.
That would be the effect, wouldn't it? And so if we're going to amend this, I'm not comfortable. I think, let me take my other stack. I'm really supportive of this bill, okay? I think getting a registration system in place is good. I haven't read through the Dash 1s and Dash 3s fully yet, but in general, I'm supportive of both of them. I think they're fine. I'm concerned about the age of sale, the age listed in here.
Okay. Madam Chair, may I? Madam Chair and Senator Steiner here, good point. I think I've heard something about an increase in the age from 18 to 21.
You think so, Mr. Cousins?
I believe that's been true. But I think you could clean that up with conflicting amendments to make sure that that does not occur.
Okay, and we can get
fix it in the
LC
house.
Involved in
this. Perhaps not that far.
I would appreciate that because I'm... just want to be sure that we don't screw this up inadvertently.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay.
Senator Mott Anderson, members of the committee, my name is Matt Minahan. I represent EC Blend and select members of the retail and manufacturing vaping industry here in support of Senate Bill 998. We've always been in support of a reasonable, uniformed licensure bill. We feel 998 does that. By reasonable, I mean the fees are uniformed throughout the state, and the counties aren't allowed to change that and have different rules and regulations to where we have different rules varying from county to county. We feel that would be unmanageable with the different locations, the many locations that my clients have. So we're here in support of 998.
The Dash 1s.
And the Dash 1s. Yes, the Dash 1s. And the only thing I would say, I'm almost afraid to say it, is the state of Washington passed a similar bill. In their bill, they did allow a vape shop exclusion for their licensing. But as it stands with the Dash 1s, we are in favor, and if there's any further discussions, we'd always be happy to sit down with any opposition and do further discussions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, for the record, Justin Rainey. I'm here today on behalf of 7-Eleven Stores. 7-Eleven supports the Senate Bill 998 and the Dash 1 amendments. As a store, 7-Eleven goes to great lengths to make sure that we're not selling the product to minors, and I think to respond to Senator Steiner Hayward's earlier question, you know, if the law is 18, the law is 18. If the law is 21, it would obviously be 21, and we wouldn't have a position on that. We do spend, in terms of a no-tolerance policy, all of our stores are equipped to electronically scan and verify the ID card so that you can tell if it's a fake ID card or a real ID card, and then we spend a lot of time training the employees so that they can try and look for the fake IDs and also walk them through sort of what to look for. The way the 7-Eleven stores have a no tolerance policy, employees are fired for just one violation, and franchisees can lose your business after several violations. So we think Senate Bill 998 puts a reasonable licensure policy in place to really go after those bad actors. We like the fact that Senate Bill 998 treats all retailers the same, regardless of size. We think the fee's appropriate. It's not overly burdensome for small businesses. The violations, we think, are clear. So it gives businesses certainty. We know if there's violations what the ramifications are. And if there is a 7-Eleven store that had five violations in 12 months, the franchisee would lose their ability to operate that franchise. So we think this really goes after the bad actors, which we support. So we would encourage the committee to adopt the Dash 1 amendments and pass Senate Bill 998.
Thank you. Questions? All right. Thank you very much. I do want to let you know that the Department of Revenue isn't really, you can come, just saw the Dash 1s, and so I told her that we would carry it over because this does impact.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm so sorry. One question. Section 17 of the original bill, page, I don't know what page I'm on, the last page, six, lines 15 through 18, it abolishes the state police tobacco law enforcement fund. How does that get paid for then? How does that piece of enforcement that's been going on get paid for?
Okay, Richard Kosasan. Section 17.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you have an answer for that?
No, I don't. I understood it was going to be picked up elsewhere.
Okay.
And not an abolishment.
Okay. So I don't know if LC Mark Mayer is listening. I don't know if he can help us.
He's listening because he texted me about the 18 and 21 issue, too.
Okay. So, Mark, come on down, will you? Yeah, we'll check on that. And I don't know if OHA wants to make a comment on that or not. I see Karen.
I just want to make sure we don't lose law enforcement opportunities.
That's right. Now, that's the original bill, and I'm not sure.
I don't know if that, I haven't had time to sort of mesh together.
And so I have not analyzed the Dash 1s either, so you may be in the same boat.
Chair Moss Anderson, members of the committee, I'm Karen Gerard with the Oregon Health Authority. I have not looked at the Dash 1s either. It's my understanding that this bill would eliminate the requirement for, I believe, for using state police, and so that enforcement fund is not necessarily, it provides more latitude for who can do inspections, and but the funds do come from elsewhere. So,
I don't want to take up too much of the committee's time, but I'm concerned because at least the way the bill is currently constructed, it says that the funds would be deposited in the general fund and shall be available for general governmental purposes, which suggests that we're taking money away from enforcement and putting it into general purposes. So I don't want to take money away from already underfunded enforcement efforts. There's not much point in putting in a system like this if we don't have the ability to enforce it. So I just need some clarity about that.
And I think because we just got the Dash 1s, I think it's important to make sure that you do your proper analysis, and then we'll cover this next Tuesday, if that's all right. But since you're here and are ready to testify on the entire bill, and let's call up Christopher Friend and Jay Douglas, might as well get all of you up here.
And Mark from LC is on his way. He's looking for the question.
And once Mark gets here, we'll just have one of you step aside and let him give us his information. Oh, here's Mark. Okay, so Mark is willing to come up right now.
Willing might not be the right word.
They were part of the job.
Oh, yeah, Mark's a nice guy.
Hello, Mr. Mayor.
This is your favorite bill. No, I think marijuana is your favorite bill. I forget.
There's no one marijuana bill. There's...
Chair Motis Anderson, members of the committee, my name is Mark Mayer, Legislative Council. I believe the question was, why does it abolish the State Police Tobacco Law Fund? Mm-hmm. The only reason it abolishes that fund is because that particular program is abolished in this bill as well. 181A-335 is a program for enforcing tobacco laws run through the Department of State Police in coordination with the Oregon Health Authority, whereby retired police officers perform services for the Oregon Health Authority. Without going into too much detail, one of the requests for this particular bill was to consolidate programs as much as possible, and that was one program that was removed from the books. That particular fund, it only funds that program, does not fund other programs related to tobacco enforcement. So it wouldn't have an effect on the broader tobacco enforcement programs in the state. Is that satisfactory?
May I ask a question, Madam Chair? Thank you. Mr. Mayor, so how does that fund get funded? Where does the money come from?
That particular fund, I have to turn to it again.
And we have time, by the way, everyone.
Thank you for your indulgence, Madam Chair. I appreciate the help.
The law is not specific to how the monies are actually deposited in the fund, so that would be purely within the discretion of the budgetary process of the Legislative Assembly.
So that gets funded as part of the state police budget on a regular... Okay, I think the long and the short of it is I'm not going to take up more of the committee's time with it now, but I would appreciate some comments from the Health Authority about enforcement and how you would see that happening and whether this would take away more opportunities for enforcement. Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, and Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Mr. Mayor, do you want to tell the committee what you told me about the 18 and 21 issue, just so they're aware of it?
Chairman Sanderson, members of the committee, this bill, as well as the other tobacco bills that reference the age 18, are on our conflicts list for purposes of fixing conflicts with Senate Bill 754 if it were to be signed by the governor. If this bill were to be moved to Ways and Means, though, it could possibly be amended prior to the conflicts process even being required, depending on when 754 were enacted into law, if it were to be enacted into law. So we are watching it and trying to make sure that everything matches up.
Thank you. Well, yes, Senator.
I mean, we could add language that basically says if, then.
Yeah, well, the conflicts language is
right.
A little bit more. But, yeah, that's basically.
I mean, basically what we'd be looking
at. If this bill is signed into law, then this section actually reads X.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Okay.
Again, Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, I'm Karen Gerard with the Health Promotion and Chronic Disease Prevention section of the Oregon Health Authority, and I'm here today to present information related to tobacco prevention and education and the public health concerns that we have with Senate Bill 998. Retail licensure creates a straightforward method for tracking businesses that sell tobacco products and inhalant delivery systems. It's also a proven tool for helping communities implement multiple strategies strategies for limiting youth access and use of tobacco products. The sale of tobacco products is illegal to children under age 18. However, 17% of Oregon 11th graders who use tobacco report obtaining it from a store or a gas station in 2015. Laws that prohibit sales to minors are important, but alone will not keep kids from using tobacco and nicotine products. We know that to prevent youth initiation of tobacco products, we must take a comprehensive approach that includes reducing youth exposure to tobacco advertising and products that are cheap, readily available, and easy to get. Currently, Oregon is one of nine states that do not require tobacco retailers to hold a license. Senate Bill 998 requires a registration, but not a license, for tobacco retailers and does not include core components that are key to monitoring and enforcing current and future laws that keep kids from using tobacco. Core components missing from Senate Bill 998 include the ability to suspend a registration for violations of laws and a fee that is adequate for covering the administration and enforcement costs. More importantly, this bill would prevent local communities from adopting local tobacco or inhalant delivery system policies for reducing the number of Oregon children and young adults that become addicted to nicotine. It also restricts opportunities for state public health to share responsibilities and collective actions with local public health, which is counter to the cornerstones of a modern public health system. Senate Bill 998 includes express preemption language that would prohibit local governments from adopting an ordinance regulating tobacco or inhalant delivery system products, or an ordinance that imposes restrictions on the time, place, and manner that tobacco or inhalant delivery system products can be sold. And this is a major concern. Preemption is harmful to tobacco prevention because it eliminates local control. Several cities and counties across Oregon currently have local tobacco retail license ordinances, and a number of others are considering them. Senate Bill 998 would prevent additional local jurisdictions from adopting stronger, tailored tobacco retail policies that reflect their community's needs and values. Oregon's TPEP program, the Tobacco Prevention and Education Program, is an evidence-based program that's effective. Since the program started 20 years ago, in 1997, cigarette consumption in Oregon has been reduced by over 50%. TPEP works in partnership with local public health authorities and tribes to prevent and reduce tobacco-related deaths in every Oregon community. The implementation of local tobacco retail license policies is a key component of this success. If local communities are prevented from using this tool, our ability to protect the health of Oregonians could be compromised. Despite declines in tobacco use, it is the number one preventable cause of death and disease in Oregon and is responsible for killing over 7,000 Oregonians every year. And as we know, addiction to nicotine starts in adolescence, and 9 out of 10 adults who smoke started before turning age 18. And around 1,800 youth under 18 become new daily smokers in Oregon every year. And that's more than graduated from all the public high schools in Pendleton, Forest Grove, Ashland, and Klamath County combined. The tobacco industry has shifted their marketing from billboards and TV and commercials to convenience stores, pharmacies, and grocery stores. 91% of the industry's total marketing expenditures for cigarettes and smokeless products are in the retail environment. In fact, the tobacco industry spends more than $111 million to advertise and promote their products in Oregon stores. Retail marketing prompts initiation, promotes daily consumption, and discourages quitting. That's why the retail environment is such an important place to have local communities able to address those issues. So where tobacco and nicotine retailers are located also affects where youth use tobacco. Minority youth who live or go to school in neighborhoods with more tobacco outlets or retail advertising have higher smoking rates compared to youth in neighborhoods with fewer outlets. These kids are more likely to experiment with smoking, more likely to start smoking, and more likely to remain smokers. The Public Health Division appreciates this committee addressing this issue, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Let's go with the panel. Jay and Chris.
Michael, are you to tell?
Chair Monis Anderson and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dr. Jay Douglas, the Environmental Health Services Director for Multnomah County Health Department. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in strong opposition to Senate Bill 998, including the Dash 2 Amendment. I'll start there. The Dash 2 Amendment adds into statute the definition of enclosed areas for the Indoor Clean Air Act. We strongly oppose this and believe that this level of detail is best suited for the rulemaking process, which allows flexibility for changes as conditions continue to change over time. Oregon has a problem with tobacco retailers selling cigarettes to our youth. During the 2015-16 enforcement inspections conducted by the Oregon Health Authority, 16% of retailers sold cigarettes illegally to youth under the age of 18. The capacity for strong enforcement of local tobacco policies are considered best practices for addressing tobacco sales to youth. Senate Bill 998 is not this, and it will not reduce access, youth access to tobacco. Senate Bill 998 creates a tobacco retail registry administered by the Department of Revenue with a nominal fee of $25. Enforcement authority is provided to the Oregon Health Authority for the registry, but without adequate funding attached. This effectively makes the law unenforceable and will not bring down Oregon's high rates of sales to minors. Additionally, we're concerned that this bill preempts local jurisdictions from stronger tobacco retail regulations. As you know, Multnomah County began licensing tobacco retailers this last July, and as of February, at the end of February, we've successfully licensed 737 retailers who've paid an annual fee of $580 in order to lawfully sell tobacco and nicotine inhalant products in Multnomah County. Outreach and education is a very important part of our enforcement activities. And it's our intent to continue to provide education and assistance to tobacco retailers to make sure that they know how to comply, what's expected of them, to comply with local and state and federal requirements, and also then to enforce the penalties in accordance with those rules. We appreciate, however, that Multnomah County's TRL program would be grandfathered in under this bill. We support the ability, though, of other jurisdictions to enact local enact additional requirements for local tobacco control beyond those required by the state and the federal law. Local control allows for more agile response as new products come onto the market. We know that they continue to change, and local authorities need to be able to adapt. It means that local elected officials can determine the policies best suited to address the ongoing epidemic of tobacco use and associated health impacts in their communities. While we recognize that this bill is trying to address the lack of information we have about who is selling tobacco products in communities across Oregon, Senate Bill 998 is not the solution to the public health crisis of our youth becoming addicted to deadly tobacco products. We urge you not to pass Senate Bill 998 and instead enact a robust tobacco retail licensing program that will reduce youth access. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Monis Anderson, Vice Chair Cruz, members of the committee, my name is Christopher Friend. I'm the Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, or ACS-CAN. I rise in opposition to Senate Bill 998. While ACS-CAN believes a statewide tobacco retail license is critically important to tobacco control and enforcement, and also ensuring youth are not able to access tobacco products illegally, we have grave concerns with the approach of Senate Bill 998. While ACS-CAN believes this bill is well-intentioned, we adamantly object to limiting retail license fees to just a nominal $25. By limiting the fee to a specific dollar amount in statute, it will severely restrict public health from implementing broad compliance checks to make certain retailers are playing by the rules. We believe a specific dollar amount will effectively tie the hands of local public health departments. As costs of enforcement increase, the ability to facilitate compliance checks will decrease, potentially leaving youth and communities across Oregon vulnerable to accessing tobacco illegally. Instead, ACS-CAN is more supportive of language found in Senate Bill 235, which allows for fee setting to support implementation and enforcement efforts needed for a robust license and compliance program. While we don't want the retail license to be onerous on a retailer, ACS-CAN believes a retail fee should provide adequate funding for a strong program. We shouldn't leave it to local jurisdictions to piece together a partially funded enforcement program. ACS can also oppose this Senate Bill 998 because it limits the authority of local elected leaders. Being new to Oregon, one of the things I appreciate new about my new home state is that we have a history of empowering local leaders to do what's best for their community. The best example of this is Multnomah County's recent tobacco retail license previously mentioned. We fear if passed, Senate Bill 998 will prohibit local lawmakers to pass ordinances which are specifically tailored to protect the youth in their community. ACS CAN opposes any effort to disempower local elected leaders from doing what's in the best interest of the people that they represent. ACS CAN applauds the efforts in both Senate Bill 998 and Senate Bill 235 to license e-cigarette retailers because e-cigarettes are not an approved FDA cessation device. We find it imperative that e-cigarettes are regulated in similar manners to traditional combustible cigarettes. If the committee is inclined to move a tobacco retail license bill, ACS CAN strongly encourages an aye vote on Senate Bill 235 and a no vote on Senate Bill 998. Thank you for the opportunity.
Questions for this panel?
Thank you so much.
Oh, yes, Senator Beyer.
Thank you. I guess the question seems to be, or what you're talking is that the $25 fee is not enough to have a good statewide enforcement program. What amount would be?
Chair Maz Sanderson, Senator Beyer, we, depending on what the requirements of a program are, we do estimate it would be about $2 million a biennium for a statewide licensing program.
So I think I heard the number 4,200 licensing, so that'd be about a $500 a year fee.
An estimated cost per license, again, this is based on a different different legislation, but would be about $335.
And that's with allowing the local jurisdictions to have an enforcement policy.
And if I may add something as well, based on rough predictions, a retailer would be able to recoup the cost of a license in one day based on those rough estimates of $325.
Okay, thank you. Deanna, she didn't see the dash ones.
That's an administrative cost in that.
Yeah, well, the Department of Revenue, and I haven't looked at the dash ones closely enough. But basically, you would be the repository of the funds, right. And so, and you would only need about $25.
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Deanna Mack, Department of Revenue, and you're right, we haven't really had enough time to really look at the dash ones or the dash twos, but I am getting feedback from staff back at home as we go. One of the things about the $25 fee is that was a price that we had talked about a couple of years ago, and that is probably a little bit low for us. We would suggest something up to $50 for our administrative costs so that we can bring it up to address inflation over the next few years so we don't have to come back every time to ask for a fee increase. It probably is closer to about $35 right now for our administration costs. Staff is wanting to point out that I believe this is in the dash one. The five violations in a 12-month period would almost probably never result in a violation, a revocation of their license, unless we counted every violation in a single inspection. So if we did that, that's probably what we would do in order to get to those bad actors. We do need probably some more time to work on some of this this stuff. Also, the dash two, they're telling me that it's inserted the Indoor Clean Air Act into the list of repealed statutes. I think they mean to insert it into the line two, which is a list of amended statutes rather than list of repealed statutes. But we will come back with some more information. I think that those the other point they wanted me to make is that the bill as drafted, I believe its introduced version, would allow DOR to assess penalties for violations of sales to minors. We do not enforce that currently. That, I believe, is OHA's purview. We would only enforce tax purposes. So we'll be happy to come back with some suggested revisions in the next day or two if you grant us that time.
Day, actually.
Day. Okay.
Well, get it back Monday, to you. Friday, no, two. Yeah.
We'll get it back to you. We'll get it back to you.
All right. Questions? Yes.
So that I'm clear, The $25 fee for DOR, or whatever that number comes up with, that's intended only to cover your administration of registering?
Madam Chair and Senator Beyer, that is correct. It's just DOR's cost.
So there's no enforcement? That doesn't cover any enforcement?
We already have staffing for enforcement of the cigarette and tobacco tax laws of the state, so we already do inspections. So this would just be the cost of the licensing or the registry.
What does that entail, your enforcement activity?
Madam Chair and Senator Beyer, our enforcement, we do random inspections to make sure that stamps are on the cigarettes packages, that invoices are in place for the other tobacco products to make sure that the tax is paid, and we issue violations. We do not enforce any of the public health things that the rest of the people up here have been testifying about. We purely just look at the tax and whether it's been paid or not.
Is there any reason why, if we were to add the enforcement of the health side, that couldn't be incorporated together?
Madam Chair and Senator Beyer, I believe that's what Senate Bill 235 does, is it incorporates both. OHA would still do their piece, and the local public health authorities would still do their piece. The fee would be enough that it would cover both, and we would distribute the fee to those entities.
I guess the concern I had is that you have multiple people out there doing that rather than having one group of inspectors doing the whole meal deal, if you will.
Madam Chair and Senator Beyer, I guess that's the disparate functions of the two agencies. I don't know how you resolve that.
Okay. Thank you, Deanna, so much. Okay, let's go to Stacy Michelson, Morgan Cowling, Courtney Dresser.
How many agencies and inspectors that they could all do it with one shot, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, people look out.
Thank you, Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Stacy Michelson with the Association of Oregon Counties. And as I've mentioned before you a few times now, but always like to remind you, your local county commissioners do act as the local public health authority and board of health in their communities. And that is why AOC has a vested interest in issues such as these. Here today to strongly, strongly oppose Senate Bill 998. Our folks take their role at the local level very, very seriously. And this bill, beyond even public health, goes against one of the very primary tenets of AOC, which is around the ability to enact ordinances at the local level that are most responsive to the community and its needs. And the preemptions that are built into this bill are pretty egregious on that front. It isn't simply preempting local communities' ability to enact a tobacco retail license, but any tobacco ordinances around sales, time, place, manner, how tobacco can be positioned in a store, where it can be located, things that our folks currently have the ability to do. So beyond a preemption, this is actually a step backward. And I would also say that while we appreciate the grandfathering in that's built into the bill, we do have a number of counties who are considering in the short term tobacco retail license and have been doing this work, and so this would curtail those efforts. And some counties that you wouldn't expect, Klamath, Umatilla, in addition to, I believe, Clackamas. So this isn't just a metro or an I-5 corridor issue. This is something that our communities all across the state are looking at. I would point out that in the revenue discussion fee, both in 235 and the work group that we had over the summer, Senator Beyer, to your point of, you know, what fee would be sufficient, that was sort of how we got to Senate Bill 235, was allowing that local element of what is needed within a community so that there wasn't a set fee, you know, all across the state, but so that it really would be dependent upon what the local needs were. We didn't intend for those fees to be outlandish. They were required to simply cover the cost of enforcing the program. You know, and I would add on to that that our local commissioners are very sensitive to the needs of the business community in their counties. So they're not going to pass an ordinance that is going to impose some, you know, incredibly high fee on their local corner stores. They're smarter than that. That's not what they're going to do. They're going to try to balance those things when they're considering any of these sorts of policies. I would also add that one really important element that was built into that fee in Senate Bill 235 was an education piece. That bill was really around trying to curb sales to minors and promoting best practices of tobacco sales. There's nothing of that nature in Senate Bill 998. Beyond the fact that there is no money for the public health enforcement side of the work, it's really not moving the dial very much in terms of actually attempting to reduce sales to minors. It's creating a registry that's helpful, but it's not giving us any juice to do a whole lot with that registry. I believe those were my my most salient points. I'm sure other folks have covered things, but I would add that in terms of tobacco prevention work, this is a weak bill, and I think most of you know that. Again, AOC strongly opposes it.
Thank you. Morgan.
Thanks. Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee. My name is Morgan Cowling, and I'm the executive director of the Coalition of Local Health Officials, representing the 34 local health departments who are doing tobacco prevention work in the local communities and trying to curb youth access. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on this bill. The Coalition of Local Health Officials strongly opposes Senate Bill 998. Earlier in the session, I testified on Senate Bill 235. Which at its core created one retail license and then had a lot of language on trying to better coordinate activities between the Department of Revenue, the Oregon Health Authority, and local jurisdictions. So I really do believe that some of the questions and concerns that have been raised were addressed in that bill. The Coalition of Local Health Officials opposes Senate Bill 998 for two primary reasons. This bill mandates that all retail activities are state responsibilities and preempts local communities from being able to work in local communities and address really the changing tobacco retail market and really trying to stop youth access. We know that this market has changed. With the creation of e-cigarettes recently, in the House Revenue Committee earlier this week, we learned about nicotine substitutes. I was not aware of those before. But this market is changing, and we need those on the ground and local communities to be able to have the tools to really create those ordinances and policies to address what is changing. And for that, the time, place, and manner authority is essential. We're also concerned that the $25 administrative fee to the Department of Revenue is not enough to increase compliance checks across the state. We know that compliance checks and checking sales to minors is a very important part of a robust tobacco retail license, and this bill, as drafted, doesn't include either enough resources or the structure on the ground across the state in place to do that. So, as written, Senate Bill 998 does not increase those enforcement activities to really deter retailers from selling to youth. We know that a strong retail license system needs to have three major components: a fee to cover the cost of compliance, no restrictions on time, place, manner, and the ability to revoke and suspend. And without the additional resources to do compliance checks, really this bill doesn't have any of those three aspects. I will say that the only other point I'd like to make is that, the SINAR data does show that we have seen a decrease in youth sales to minors. During that same time that we've seen a decrease, we also have seen Multnomah County's tobacco retail license system go into place, and we've seen Lane County enact a tobacco retail license and cities within Lane County as well. So I think what we're seeing is that these policies really can work, and we would not like to see other communities be preempted from being able to work locally. So I would encourage you to continue to consider Senate Bill 235 and not move forward Senate Bill 998. Thank you.
Thank you. Courtney.
Good afternoon. Courtney Dresser with the Oregon Medical Association. And I'm here really just to
kind of convey some of the aspects from provider communities. And as we know, this is still tobacco use and is still a major issue in our state and affects many of the OMA providers, patients, and their families. And so looking at any tool we can use in our toolbox to battle this addiction and to help, most importantly, help kids not get addicted to tobacco products is something that we're strongly a part of and want to see happen. And we understand that a retail licensure thing item is something that we've been talking about for quite some time. There's been a lot of work groups, and actually for some time now, there's been work groups. I think Senator Morris had a work group a long time ago on this issue. So this has been something we've been talking about for a very long time. And for the OMA, one of our agenda items is seeing an increase in tobacco taxes and also to establish a tax on these vaping products. As we see more and more kids starting these products, I think it's important that we do what we can to kind of make it as price sensitive as possible, and we know that young people are price sensitive. To do those taxes, it makes sense also to have a retail license process in our state to help us do that. So for that purposes, we're opposed to this bill as it is, but do hope to see some of the pieces in 235 maybe be incorporated.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you. I want to clarify a comment I made earlier. Is this what I would consider even close to a perfect bill? No. Am I prepared to seriously consider moving this forward to get something in place in every single jurisdiction in this state so that we can have a clear track record of every single place selling these products to kids? Yeah, I am. And there are provisions of this that I would prefer to see changed. I'm a little worried about the extent of the preemption. I'm worried about the low fee perhaps decreasing the funds available for enforcement, which I think are very important. But frankly, I don't think we can expect every single county in this state to enact the kinds of licensing programs that, even if we didn't have a preemption, I don't think we could expect every county to enact the kinds of licensing provisions that Multnomah County has done. And I worry that children in some counties are not being as protected as children in other counties. And I can't say even which counties would be which. Sometimes I'm surprised by which counties move forward on things. So I'm not claiming that this is an urban-rural issue or anything else like that. But this would at least give us the backbone of structure that would give us some level of confidence, regardless of whether we get taxing or not. I mean, in theory, at least, DOR knows where they're selling tobacco because of the taxing. We have no idea who's selling vape products at this point, right? Am I happy about the extent of this bill? Nope. Am I willing to accept it if it's a way to start us on the path to getting a clear understanding of every single establishment in the state that's selling this stuff? Probably. So I just wanted to clarify that. It's not really a question, okay. Madam Chair, but I wanted to get
thank you
record.
Very much. Thank you. Bill Perry and Joseph Gilpatrick. And Bill's here to talk about the Dash 2s, correct? Okay.
I'll go ahead, sir. Thank you, Chairman Sanderson, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Perry at the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. I appreciate the opportunity today, and I'm here in support of the Dash 2s. I know there's a couple of people that were involved in the bill that is the issue that we're fixing, so I'll use this term, and you guys can correct me if you don't like it. So I think that the enclosed areas was inadvertently removed last session during the full session. I think a lot of us were unaware of it, and so it has created some issues, and I just wanted to give kind of a brief history of why it's there in the first place. Obviously, we as an association supported the ban on smoking in bars when it passed, and one of the issues that arises from that is what do you do with this population? Because I haven't been tracking smoking since that happened because we don't really sell cigarettes. But, you know, back then about 25% of the population smoked. But when you get to after 10:30, it's a majority of the population smokes. And so what happens to that population when they can't smoke in inside, they go outside. And so if we are able to build an enclosed area outside where they can smoke, we're now in control of that population. When you look right now at the most of the complaints around smoking that's happening in Oregon today, it's about people smoking outside of establishments. And so when they remove the enclosed area, you're going to have more people smoking outside on the street, which creates problems because I no longer have control of those as a restaurant or bar. So really what we're trying to deal with is how do you control that population now that they can't smoke inside? With weather and all these different things, you have to have some protective cover. And so it's better to have that in statute. And so we can control that population than basically have things changing. Because when people build structures, you make them illegal. Now what do I do? And so what we're trying to do is be able to control that population now that they can't smoke inside anymore. And so if we want to have a broader conversation, we don't mind doing that. But in the short term, we need to figure out how to get this control over this population back, and so that's what we're trying to achieve.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you for your chair. Thank you for your time, Chair Moss Anderson. My name is Joseph Gilpatrick. I'm a vape shop manufacturer and owner of a shop here in Oregon. I'm here today. You know, I was going to stay totally in support of 98, but I'm not completely. I believe that it could be tighter in some areas, and it could be a little stronger. I know a lot of people in the vaping industry are completely on board with a registration, with a licensure bill, just not one that has a single violation with a $5,000 fine, and one that could revoke your license and your business. We need to find a middle ground where I feel like the pendulum is swinging very far on either side with 235. Versus 998. I feel like we need to find some middle ground. And honestly, I think that 998 is a great stepping point for that. Obviously, I believe five violations in a year is a little bit silly. As a vape shop owner, if you've gotten popped twice in 6 months, you're not doing your job properly. You're not taking care of your employees. You know, certain things obviously could be tightened up on this. $25. You know, I don't know what the fees or licensing would cost, but you know, I know that it's important for our regulation. It's important for us to be accountable for our businesses, and we need to get something set up. Much as Mrs. Steiner-Hainwood said, I believe everything in that. I don't believe that some of these other licensure bills are going to be sustainable for most of these businesses, though. I can't be accountable for an employee when I'm out of town getting a single violation for someone that didn't check ID. To lose my license, that would just be not okay. I believe honestly that we are on the right path of getting youth to quit smoking cigarettes. You know, when I graduated high school, it was 35% of teenagers were smoking cigarettes outside of, you know, my high school seniors, 35%. Now the national average is down to 9%. I know some of that is people using nicotine replacement therapy, such as, you know, chewing gums and lozenges and, you know, vaporizers and certain things that are and are not approved by the FDA, but they're not tobacco and they're not smoke. And so, you know, we are decreasing youth smoking. And as much as it's new products that we don't quite understand, we do know that they're much safer and healthier alternatives, and we need to embrace that before we tax items that we know that are much healthier and safer for the communities. You know, we should analyze these things. A licensure bill, like I said, to keep us accountable is great. I am in support of 998. I believe that we should have some amendments in place to tighten it up in a couple of areas, and I'm completely opposing to you know, the way that 235 is written. It just it, like I said, it's an overreach, and it doesn't really do anything but hurt the small businesses under that licensure bill. So
great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
The last two people are Katie Tyson and Scott Winkle. You have another bill, and we did get paperwork on 856, so if
Chairman Anderson, members of the committee, Katie Tyson with the Oregon Nurses Association. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on behalf of ONA's nearly 15,000 members in opposition to Senate Bill 998. ONA members work in a variety of healthcare settings and across the board. They see the adverse impacts of tobacco and nicotine use, which is why ONA has really actively engaged in working to pass progressive policies to limit youth access and promote cessation. And at the core of really effectively implementing those policies is an adequate enforcement system through a robust retail licensure system. Without a tobacco retail structure in place, point of sale and tobacco tax policies are really difficult to enforce. And unfortunately, as you've heard, Senate Bill 998 would create a really weak registration system, we believe, that would do little to enforce the current and future laws that Oregon passes. So I really just wanted to reiterate, since a lot of this has been said, but the three key components that the Oregon Health Authority has found to curb youth access and addiction to tobacco through a tobacco retail licensure system, and all three of these are necessary. Meaningful fees and penalties, the ability to suspend or revoke licenses, and no mechanism to preempt localities from passing stronger laws. And as you've heard, the bill does not contain any of those three provisions. So we'd really like to see an effective tobacco retail licensure system in place, because it is a crucial mechanism to, see through the really great policies that you all are passing. But unfortunately, Senate Bill 998 does not have the effective components to meaningfully affect tobacco and nicotine prevention and cessation, which is why we encourage you to look for a much more robust and effective policy than the proposal outlined in the bill.
Thanks, Kate.
Thank you.
Scott.
Chairman Anderson, for the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities. The League is comprised of all 241 incorporated cities in the state of Oregon, and I'm appearing in opposition to Senate Bill 998, specifically Section 15 of this bill. The Oregon Constitution has twice been amended to reflect the value of local control and to protect local governments and to ensure that their ability to govern in a way that best fits their community. This bill is a fairly clear preemption, and it's and I don't use the word lightly. It's actually startling in some ways in how far this preemption reaches. I would draw your attention on page 5 in section 15, lines 35 and 36, where it states that local government may not adopt an ordinance or rule that provides for the regulation of tobacco products or inhalant delivery systems. Goes on to say in 42 and 43, on lines 42 and 43, that those, unless it's to the extent that our ordinances are confirming a state or federal law related to retail. The way I read that is that if a city wanted to adopt a no tobacco use ordinance for a park, for a trail, in a government, in a plaza where it's outdoors, I don't believe that we could do that without challenge. Could we challenge it? Yeah. Would we win? Maybe. But that is, I don't know that that's the intent, but that's the way I read it, and that's the depth this preemption goes. The state is not the entity that's going to take complaints from neighbors and citizens over tobacco use or concerns with vaping. That's going to go to a city manager or a code enforcement officer. Cities are going to be in a position of dealing with neighborhood complaints and desire on councils to regulate for livability and public health, and our hands will be tied to do so. And for those reasons, we strenuously oppose Section 15 of this bill.
Thanks so much, Scott. Thanks, Katie. Colleagues, we will be carrying this over until Tuesday, April 18th. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 998 and open a public hearing. Let's do a work session. Open a work session on Senate Bill 856.
Madam Chair, I move.
We've already adopted.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I know. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 856. As amended by the dash one and dash two amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
No, the dash twos and dash threes.
Dash twos and dash threes, excuse me.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 856 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Beyer?
Excused.
Senator Cruz?
Excused.
Senator Spencer
Hayward? Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries, and I'll carry the bill, and I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 856 and open a public hearing
on 2304.
Oliver. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2304 passed out of the House. The bill updates the definition of peer support specialists and youth support specialists and adds these positions to lists of traditional health workers that specialize in both peer and youth support services. There's a dash three. The dash three would add certified advocates to the definition of traditional health workers.
And do we have a sheet? I think you have the sheet.
We do. Thank you.
The paperwork came.
Madam Chair. Okay. Nicole Corbin, Dan Torres, and Nikki Tursiev. That's all we have for this bill. Who's going first?
I will go first.
Okay.
Senator Monis Anderson, members of the committee, I'm Nicole Corbin. I am the Adult Behavioral Health Services Manager for the Health Systems Division of the Oregon Health Authority. And I am here to testify in support of House Bill 2304. Just for a little bit of historical context, in 2013, HB 3407 established the Traditional Health Workers Commission to provide a registry of traditional health workers. This was in order to allow their services to be reimbursed by Medicaid. At that time, it was believed that peer wellness specialists were essentially the same as peer support specialists. However, this isn't really the case. When the Traditional Health Worker Commission developed rules, policies, and procedures, peer support specialist was included. And since then, specialties have developed within the profession. This bill acknowledges that there are subspecialties among peer workers and takes definitions that are in rule and adds them to the statute. Both the Traditional Health Worker Commission through the Office of Equity and Inclusion and Medicaid identified the need to name traditional health workers in statute. Please note Medicaid already includes peer support specialists as a payable service provider, as do the Joint Centers for Medicaid and CHIP Services and the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. So this is matching federal language. What this legislation does, HB 2304 adds peer support specialists to the list of traditional health workers originally named in the 2013 legislation. For clarity, it also identifies family support specialists and youth support specialists as worker specializations of both peer support specialists and peer wellness specialists. This provides statutory authority to the rules promulgated by the Oregon Health Authority through the Office of Equity and Inclusion, the Traditional Health Worker Commission, and the Integrated Health Systems Division, which is Medicaid. This updates the definition of worker types to reflect the best practice and registry requirements set by OHA through the Traditional Health Worker Commission and Medicaid. This does not cause any increase in cost to Medicaid because these worker types are already providing services through CCO payments and Medicaid reimbursements. This doesn't cause any change in the criminal background checks for these worker types. It stays the same as what's already required. And there's no change to the current policies and procedures of Medicaid and Traditional Health Worker Commission. OHA supports this bill without amendments. We hope that you will as well. And thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I am happy to answer any questions.
Dan, go ahead.
Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, my name is Dan Torres. I represent Oregon AFSCME. We represent roughly 25,000 workers across the state, including behavioral health workers. We are also part of the Solidarity Alliance of Social Services, which is a consortium and collective of direct support providers who work in the behavioral health arena and came together to advocate for behavioral health outcomes and support for direct service providers. I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 2304. We recognize the importance and the vital role peer, family, and youth support specialists have in the behavioral health system and support the efforts to increase access and awareness for the services they provide. For that reason and those reasons, we strongly urge in support of House Bill 2304. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Nikki.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me, Nikki Tursiev, here in the nick of time for the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. We're here certainly in support of the base bill, also asking for consideration on the dash three. The dash three expands from five to six the list of folks who would be eligible to be qualified as a traditional health care worker. And the advocates that we're talking about are folks who go through state certification, 40 hours of training. They are well vetted and well experienced. They meet the victim and survivor at the most traumatic moment and spend sometimes years with that same survivor and their family, helping to usher them through systems such as medical advocacy, legal advocacy, workforce training, workforce development, helping children stay in schools. Rushing down here,
I know.
So in short, supportive of the dash threes, asking for consideration for adding those to this base bill, and certainly in support of the efforts of all of the traditional healthcare workers.
Was this bill amendment considered in the House?
Madam Chair, no, it was not considered in the House. We had had some prolonged conversations, and this opportunity appeared to us, and we were able to help coordinate with some of the proponents. And we'll go back and certainly do our homework on the other side and make sure that folks are comfortable.
Okay. Did you have opposition?
Madam Chair, no.
Okay. Great. Well, that you're the only three who signed up to testify. Do you have any questions? Colleagues, okay, thank you very much. And please, if everyone's on board with the dash threes, make sure you get the amendment to Oliver. Okay, with that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2304. And how are we doing, Oliver? I want to make sure that we've done everything we are supposed to do and carry over everything that we were supposed to carry over.
Yeah.
Okay, with that, we're adjourned.